my lead on comes
on. Love Talk Radio.
Here we go.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. Day Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
And that, everyone, was created by Rachel and Michael from Trinity House Entertainment.inc. And when I get really overwhelmed, I just listen to their music and I'm not overwhelmed anymore. But this is going to be so much fun. We have the author of Second Story Man, Charles Salzberg, here. We have the author of The Russian Resurgent, Alan Topol. Yesterday's News, Dick Belsky. And Among the Shadows in the John Byron series, we have Bruce Coffin. Hi, everyone. This is going to be fun.
Hello.
I hope.
Hi, friend.
Hi. I'm so happy that you guys decided to do this, because this is one of several panels that I've thought of recently. Besides the fact that I should say on June 27th, I am getting an exclusive interview with Tess Gerrinson for her new movie, Island Zero. And, yeah, I watched the outtakes. Now I have to watch the movie, and it's really scary. If you think The Twilight Zone was scary, this is really scary. So, question one. Charles, you wrote at the Second Story Man. How did you decide on the ending of the novel, and why did you decide to leave it, letting everybody know that the killer's not done? So, well, someone's not done yet. How did you decide to write that?
Well, usually the way I decide everything else, which is I don't decide. I get to the end, and it's almost like it couldn't be any other ending. In other words, I know that you're absolutely right. I don't want to give the ending away, because it's kind of a surprise. But there are far more obvious endings than the one I used, and I'd like to take credit that I planned it from the beginning, but I really didn't, because I'm sure all these guys will tell you that the characters and plot kind of take over, and I'm not one who outlines, but I know a lot of authors do. I wonder if anyone else on the panel outlines and knows the end before they get there.
I'll answer that, Alan. I agree with Alan. I think it's definitely nice to have some idea where you're headed, I think, and arrive at that ending satisfying your original desire to tell the story. But I also think I agree with Alan that if you spend all that time plotting out every single detail, I think you'll be sorely disappointed, because your characters definitely drive the direction of the story. And I think sometimes the ending really invents itself for you, if that makes any sense.
RG Belsky here, just to chime in. And, you know, Charles and I have compared notes many times about the way we write, and we actually write very similar. And I agree in the sense that I just think you can overthink this stuff. You know, a lot of people, like, I'm not an outliner, I'm not a planner. I have a sort of an idea where the book is going. That can change as the book goes through, but it should come naturally. It shouldn't be something that you really overthink too much.
It's Alan Topol here. Let me raise a couple other considerations. One of them is, what do you do with your villain? I mean, in Russian Resurgence, because all of us on this call, we write, you know, novels year after year. So what do you do with your villains? And I sort of like to keep my villain alive, as I did my Russian president, Kuznov, in Russian Resurgence, because then you can use your villain in another novel, which is good. And you'd like to set it up. On the other hand, it gets complicated, because readers don't want to feel sort of cheated that the author's just setting them up for another book. And I've had readers, you know, express that happily, not about my books, but about other authors, that they felt sort of cheated. Now, the other thing is, I did a stupid thing once in one of my books. I killed off a hero, and I could have brought that hero back, but I was a very young new novelist, and I'll never make that mistake again.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's one of the other considerations that goes into this, is keeping characters alive to fight or love or be whatever another day.
I asked you
that on the show the other day, too, yeah. So do you guys allow the villain to remain at large, leaving the reader to wonder? That's a good point, Alan. Is he going to return or not? And I have to tell you, Charles, I was like, oh, my God. So would you do that, guys? Leave it so, you know, does everybody leave the villain to return, or do you kill him off?
I think you have to be very, very careful with that. I mean, obviously there is some... there are some, you're going to do a Hannibal Lecter, some characters that are so powerful that you kind of want to do that. I sometimes will leave some stuff open-ended in the end, but I think there has to be a feeling of some kind of satisfaction by what the reader gets at the end of the book. You don't have to answer all the questions, but, you know, like, I've read this whole book and you're going to leave me hanging here. I don't like that. It's like a TV show, you know, at the end. Oh, to be continued, you know, in the season a year from now on HBO. So I think you, in most books, but it's like anything, there are no rules. And there are certain characters that are larger than life and they can carry over. But I wouldn't, I personally don't like to overuse that device.
It's Charles Salzberg here. I just want to mention that one of the books that I read when I was very young was Norman Mailer's Naked and the Dead. And I'm reading along, and there's a main character, and it's Lieutenant Hearn. And this book's been out quite a while, so I'm not spoiling anything. Halfway through the book, Mailer kills off this character. And my reaction was kind of what you were mentioning, Dick. I felt cheated. But then I realized what a terrific thing to do, to sort of shock the reader and to go in a direction that the reader never would expect. And so kind of like life. And so I've always remembered that. And obviously it was important because it stayed with me all these years. And so like Dick, I don't think there are any rules. And I would never keep keep a character alive simply so I could use them again. That to me seems a little bit manipulative.
Isn't the classic example of that, though, Charles? You know, and it's not a book, it's a movie, but a classic movie, of killing off a character in the middle of a movie that you can't believe is killed off is Psycho, where Janet Leigh, who's the star of the movie, dies in the shower, you know, like one-third of the way in the movie. And, you know, we all know that now as we watch it. You know, we've all watched it 100 times. But I remember being a young kid when that movie came out, and people were like, wait a minute, she can't die. She's the star of the movie. But she wasn't.
And you remember it.
Not really.
My point.
So does your ending ever leave, like, you have Craig Page, and you have Charles Floyd, and you have Claire Carlson, and you have John Byron. I have this all on my paper so I don't mess up, so I got the right people here. Does the ending ever leave your character in dire situation, letting the readers know that the character is frustrated, it's not over, or that the character is not happy with the ending and they would like to change it?
No, Fran, it's Alan Topol. I'm really, as you said, with Craig Page, and this is true with the new book, Russian Resurgence. Craig and Elizabeth to both be happy at the end of the book and satisfied, because otherwise, I really think the reader will be unhappy. And you know, in their relationship, Craig and Elizabeth goes up and down. But, you know, once I had them have some problems, and gee whiz, readers got mad at me because they liked Elizabeth. So, I mean, I think I'd like them at the end of the book, notwithstanding their trials and tribulations, to be, A, satisfied with where they are and satisfied together. And I think that's what readers seem happier with. At least that's my own feeling. I'd be interested to hear how other of our colleagues think.
This is Charles. Why should the character be any happier than I am? That's what I think. You know, you know, let them write their own book if they want to be happy.
Archie Belsky here. Yeah, I pretty much agree with the idea that you want to make the reader happy, because I know when I write things, I kind of think of, well, what do I like to read as a reader? And what I want at the end of the book is I do want it not all wrapped up maybe, but basically resolved, and the character is not left in a dire situation. I've read a couple books recently by really major authors where they not only don't resolve it, but basically the book becomes a setup for the next book a year from now. And it's kind of like this completely open-ended thing where, you know, like, okay, you can come back in a year and read this. And some people may like that. Mm-hmm. As a reader, I find it kind of disconcerting, and I would never – I try, because of that, as an author not to do that to the people reading my books.
Well, considering I've read about thousands of books, and oh, gosh, sometimes it fits. I mean, Charles, in your book, it definitely did fit, and I was like, oh, my God. I just finished, for those of you that read David Burnsworth, Bad Time to Begin, and it's coming out July 10th. And his ending, it sort of sums up what happened, but the main character has to make a life-changing decision. And I went, are you serious? Interesting. Very, very interesting that he decided to do that. And I said, like, oh, my God, this is – well, he's got three women that are after the main characters. Well, can you blame them? So before writing your novel, do you decide on the ending and where the storyline will go to force the plot? And do you ever get a minor character that sort of says, do this?
Yes to all those. I mean, sort of yes to all of them. I have a general idea of the ending, but yes, minor characters can certainly do it. But you know, I think we addressed this when Charles started in the beginning, which a lot of us, and I'm one of them, you know, the it unfolds as you're writing the book, and the ending that you have in mind, it may sort of still be the ending, but it probably is not going to be the exact ending that I had in mind when I started the book. Because a good book, you know, that's the kind of, obviously, we're all trying to write. A good book really, really does have a life of its own, and the characters have lives of their own. And if you're just putting, you know, mechanically things down on into the computer, it's not really going to work. It really has to come alive for you as an author, so it will come alive for the reader, too.
Well, and the other part of it, too, is I think when you're doing the ending, and I like to do detailed outlines, which I don't, it's Alan Tope, which I stick with sometimes and not others. But the other thing I find, and it's hard to do, and it doesn't come to me till the end of the book, is I think the ending has to, at least for me, have some excitement and climax. I mean, I think I like big endings, something big happening. Once I did an early draft of a novel, and my editor said to me, hey, your story fell off a cliff. And I've been conscious of that, and I really don't think it should. I mean, I think there should be a big dramatic ending of some type. At least that's my feeling, that it makes for a stronger resolution. And I can't see, when I'm starting, that big, powerful ending often. But do others agree that we ought to try to go for something? I mean, like I have in Russian Resurgence, a big kind of shootout scene, as you know, Fran, in Budapest and in the Parliament Square. But how do others feel? I sort of think you'd need that at the end of a thriller.
How do you feel? I think 100%. I agree. I don't think that's even something we have to debate. But I think one other issue in that is that I know for myself, you talked about a big shootout at the end, and obviously that's great when you can do it. So my character is a journalist, so he doesn't carry a gun. So I think it becomes a little more challenging because you can have a shootout, but he's kind of involved in it. And in fact, in like one of my recent books, I had him like actually pick up a gun in the shootout and actually begin involved. But if you're writing a PI or a police officer, it becomes a little bit more easier than when you're writing more of a kind of a private citizen who you have to figure out a way. Okay, how do we do this epic conclusion, and how do we make it very exciting?
I want to know, Alan, if you mind if I steal your cliff ending for my next book.
I asked him, you know, Alan, you've got to bring Nick back. I'm sorry. You know, that kid really is great. He just introduced this
Friend.
Child in the other book. Yeah, I love him.
Fran, I think there also needs to be, you know, there are two ways to end these books. I think with what we're writing, I think we definitely all want that exciting climax if we can get it, that we've taken the reader on this ride for. But I also think that the way that I like wrapping these up is to have the characters, the main characters, actually arrive at a different point in their personal lives. And I think that also can be very gratifying, even though it's not necessarily wrapped up. It's a certain point that we wanted them to grow into.
I agree with you, because if you read in it to be A Bad Time to Be In It by David Bunsworth, that is exactly what he did. And I won't say any more, because it's an ongoing investigation, and I promised I would keep quiet until July 10th when I reveal it all, I hope. So when creating your villain, how does this villain match up with your main character? Is the villain ever smarter and so crafty that the main character has to actually invite somebody else to help them solve the case?
Well, I think that if your villain, and I never think of him that way, isn't at least as smart as the protagonist, then it's kind of no one's going to like it, because it's going to be so predictable. This is just the way I feel, and I don't really think of them as villains, because I don't think anyone gets up in the morning and says, you know, that kind of day today, I'm going to be a bad guy today, I'm going to do evil things today. Real people aren't like that. They do self-interest things, but they don't think of themselves as evil or villains.
Mm.
And I think that, I think that a lot of books, and I think I'm just thinking back on some of the books that I've written, R.G. Bilski here again, I don't necessarily have a clear-cut villain all the way through the book. There may be a cast of characters. There may be somebody, like in Yesterday's News, there may be somebody that you think is a villain that may or may not be a villain. And sometimes the person at the end who committed the crime is much more subtle. So I just think there's different kind of books. But again, I don't always have the clear cut villain. Sometimes I do, but not always.
You also, Fran, it's Alan Topol here. You made a good point about when you said, does your hero get help in dealing with the villain? And Craig Page gets help from Elizabeth Crowder, who's his romantic interest, a journalist, powerful character on her own, and she has to sometimes rein Craig in and turn him around. And she has her own relationship with the Russian president, Kuznov, and so at the end of Russian Resurgence, she becomes vital in finding the way to resolve the dilemma that they're in. And so I think that's helpful, to just not have the hero out there by himself, but have somebody who is meaningfully working with him or her.
I wonder if any of you guys had this. I in Second Story Man, when I first conceived of the idea, I was going to create a burglar, a crook, who was very much like Cary Grant, and got away from me and became who he really was. And he's not likable. He's not like Cary Grant at all. So I wonder whether you guys have that too, where you have that sense of what you think the character is going to be, but as you're writing, the character changes.
That's interesting, because I think throughout your book, Charles Floyd and Manny change in a sense, and Craig, from one book to the next, I never know what he's going to do. And RJ, how would you depict Claire, because I liked her. I've never read. Yesterday's News came
how
to me.
How would I depict
Claire, your main character in Yesterday's News?
Right.
I liked her. You have to bring her back, I hope.
I am. New one coming out next year. But so Claire is a TV journalist and a reporter. And I guess the best way to describe her, because I've written a lot about her recently, is she's got a lot of good points, but she's got some bad points too. So she's kind of a flawed character. She may be more flawed than any of the characters that I've done. I've had people say when they read her, like, she makes me mad. Why did she do that? But I like her anyway. So that's a kind of a good reaction. But she's not perfect, but then, you know, like I say, if you write a perfect hero, it can get kind of boring. So she's willing to do a lot of things to get the story, the truth, all that kind of stuff. And some of these things aren't necessarily, playing by the rules.
No, I agree. Do you ever, a lot of authors, and it drives me crazy sometimes, have backstories and what they did when they were 10 and when they did when they were 12 and then they lead up to what they are now. That is like, oh, my God. So do you ever, talk about whatever is frustrating the character, what might prevent them from solving anything?
I always do. I couldn't write a book unless I knew what motivates a character. I think if you don't do that, you've got very mm-hmm. one-dimensional characters.
I agree. In the first novel, Fran, if you remember correctly, Among the Shadows, John really is, mm-hmm. is sort of held back for a while because of the things in his own past that have shaped who he is,
mm-hmm.
that he's not letting go of and that he's not necessarily even accurately remembering.
So does that impact the way they solve the case at first? Or does it just change as the novels go? I can't wait to read the next one.
I don't think it impacts the way he goes about solving the case, but I think it definitely affects his biases mm-hmm. and how he sees things and how
mm-hmm.
he sees himself, which is important. I mean, self-esteem to our main characters is obviously very important to who they are.
I think almost any book has to have, however you want to call it, but I would use the term a B story. And the B story can be something that the character is dealing with in present time, whether it be a gambling problem, a drinking problem, a marital problem, whatever. Or it can be a combination of things. It can be something in their past. And like a lot of authors, I tend to use that a lot, that there's something in the past that is clearly having an impact on what's going on now in terms of them trying to solve the crime.
Actually, this is Alan Topol. You're really making a good point. Is when I did a novel, a bunch of novels ago, somebody said to me, gee, your hero is too perfect. This is before I started with Greg Page, Fran, who's not too perfect. But and I took that seriously. I thought it was good advice. And I don't think the hero can be too perfect. I mean, I think the hero needs to have flaws. He or she needs to be a real person in that respect. And I think that's awfully important to give him some weaknesses and character flaws.
That's a really good point. And I'm just going to quote another well-known author who Charles and I are both pretty familiar with, Reed Farrell Coleman, because, we were at an event where he was talking about writing Jesse Stone. And he said that which is the Robert Parker character had created, and he's taken over doing it. And he said that writing Jesse Stone, the biggest challenge is that he's too good, he's too perfect, mm-hmm. Because you have this guy who, number one, when you read Jesse Stone, you see the TV character, you see he's handsome, he's tough, he's got integrity, he's got all these great things, and you've got to give him problems. So, you have the drinking, you have the marital stuff, you have the failed baseball career. But, he said that unlike other characters he'd done, it's like, okay, I can't have this guy be too perfect.
Well, since I'm perfect, there's not enough room for two perfect people in the room. So I totally agree with you guys.
Wow.
So when you decide the villain or you decide the main thrust of the book, how do you decide whether it's going to be, somebody that's going to do a terrorist attack or someone that's going to steal a child? How do you decide the main topic of what the main character is going to go through? Because there are a lot of writers out there, I mean, like myself, I read like thousands of mystery thrillers, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I mean, I have thoughts in my head, but I wouldn't even go there. So how do you decide what you're going to write about, Craig Page or John Byron or Claire or or even Charlie Flood? How do you decide what their problem's going to be?
Okay, well, it's Alan Topol. Let me take a whack at that one, Fran. In all my books, Fran, the Craig Page books, there's always a background geopolitical issue that Craig mm-hmm. is going to have to deal with. In Russian resurgence, it's a sliding back into the Cold War and Russia's effort to reassert itself in Central Europe. So since I'm in Washington, where I have my career and my writing geopolitical background in my stories, there's no limit to the kind of problem issues in the world. And so I start with one of those and build a story around that that Craig will have to engage with. And so that's kind of the way I begin, which fits with my Craig page.
And it's really interesting because I learn a lot every time I read one of your books. And I'm this time
well,
I learned about,
you know, one of
Hungary
the
and Russia. I did. I really learned about a lot that I didn't know before. That was really good. You got through them, got through to that on for sure. So anybody else? How do you decide? I mean, Charles, you're writing another one. So what's going to happen? You know, how do you decide where to go next?
For me, I try to stay away from the predictable topics. And other than character, and I don't write murders, as you know. I mean, there may be a murder or two in the book, but it's not about murder. And so, for instance, in one of my Swan books, I just wanted to learn more about the world of rare books. So that's where I set the story. In the last Swan, Swan's Way Out, I just wanted to delve into Hollywood, but on a side of Hollywood that people don't know about, which is the Christian film market. So for me, it's just indulging my own curiosity and trying to do something that's a little bit offbeat.
I don't know if other authors, I think a lot of authors operate in the same way I do with this, which is, you know, you don't sit down and suddenly decide, okay, this is the topic, this is what I will write about. For me, it's something, it's not just weeks or months, it could be years. I mean, it'll be something that I have been thinking about. And so by the time I actually sit down to start the book, I have an idea, you know, that I've done. I mean, for instance, yesterday's news, as you know, Fran, it's about a legendary missing child cold case. I actually got the idea for this back in, I think, 2004. And you know, and it took and the book didn't come out until this year. I mean, I was doing a lot of other stuff along the way. But most of my books are things that, you know, you walk around, you're thinking about it, you're saying, wow, you know, that'd be an interesting book, but I'm doing this now or whatever. You can't just start with a blank page. You have to have gone over it a lot. At least that's the way I operate.
I agree with Pachi. I think that's exactly how it works. Generally, I find that my story ideas come while I'm trying to finish the last one, and they have to sort of be held at bay and you allow them to sort of grow as you think about it in the back of your mind. And then you finally get to a point where it's your reins are off and you're ready to write the new book, and you've got a pretty good idea of where you want to go.
Does the character ever change personalities, the main character? Or do you pretty much, they just grow, or do they just change or handle things differently in each book? Because it just doesn't seem that they're the same. That's why I'm so interested and I read them. And then when you have a main character that's, oh, yeah, he's going to solve it. Okay, oh, my God. It's just, do they ever change their way they act or their personalities grow from series to series since it's the same character?
They do for me. Swan is not the same as he was. I'm just finishing this one now. He's very much changed, and I think that if you don't have change, then it becomes unrealistic and cliched, because people change and people want to see change too.
That's a fine line. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. People do change and you want to show change. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, people do behave in character as to what their character is, and you can't suddenly shift them around too much, or it becomes jarring for the readers. I mean, you don't want the reader saying, you know, hey, Craig Page would never do this or whatever, because the readers have a formula. It's as if they know this person and they have certain expectations. So that's, I mean, I think that your comment's really a good one, but that's the tricky part of keeping a character from book to book, is how to make him or her grow and at the same time keep them within character. And it's It's not easy, but we all struggle with it, and I think it's important to work within the narrow confines, is the way I guess I would put it.
Well, I think that when you have a long go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say I agree, but what drives me crazy is when someone has a series of maybe 10 books or whatever, and the character stays the same age throughout the whole.
Oh yeah, right.
You know, throughout the whole series, that drives
right.
me crazy. So. So I think in what you were saying.
I was just going to raise that, Charles, because I think the aging thing is like, and when you look at all the long-running series, different authors handle that in different ways. And, and you know, like, does your character, I mean, it's a great problem to have, which is like you write 40 books in a series, but what do you do with that character? And not everybody does it the same way.
But this is why I refer to the comment right before yours, Dick, and before mine, is because that's very true. You can't change the character so that they wouldn't do what the character would do. But we all change as we age. We're less agile. We think differently. So that's the kind of rather subtle changes that I'm talking about, is that we at, let's say, 50 don't think and do the same things we did when we were 20. And so that's why I think it's far more interesting to age, if you've got a series, to age the character, because it gives you lots of leeway as a writer to make changes, to have changes to that character.
Well, one more thing on that, Charles, is that I think an example of somebody who I think does this really well, and I would assume that most people obviously are familiar with him because he's so well-known, is Michael Conley in the Harry Bosch character. Now, Harry Bosch, I think, made his first appearance in the early 90s as a LAPD homicide detective. And the books now, I mean, he's gotten older, he's gotten kids, a kid, who's an adult. But more importantly, he's basically not even on the police force anymore. You know, he's moved off, he's retired, and yet he's the same character. He reacts to things in much the same way. So I always thought Michael Conley. Now the opposite of that is now Spencer aged a little bit as the years went on, but that was never really clear. Mm-hmm. And I'm not 100% sure, but I think somebody just told me, and I'd read a lot of them earlier, that Kinsey Malone with Sue Grafton only like would age a couple years, but she was basically very much the same age over, you know, the 25 alphabet books. So I don't know if there's a right way or wrong way to do it. I kind of can like it either way, but I do think Conley does a really, really job of incorporating that change and aging into a long-running series, but keeping the characters the same.
I'm going to have to try to get them. Have any of you read Iris Johansson, Eve Duncan? Because her books are good, but like you just said, sometimes they're all the same. And it's just a matter of, you know, who died and what skull and who the person is. And the characters are, I mean, they're good, but after a while it's like, okay. Do you ever do an ending that requires the interpretation of the reader? I mean, how many books have I read? And do you ever do one that's an implied ending where they're not really sure how it ends?
Every single one of my books.
I know.
Right.
I've read every one of them, too.
No, I don't like to do that, Fran. I like to have an ending. I like to know, you know, have the reader know where we are and how we've resolved this issue. And granted, there are, you know, international issues are never resolved. They always keep popping up. I mean, Russia's resurgence from the book is going to continue. So if I want to write about it again, I can write about it again because it will continue. But at least this particular episode involving Hungary does have a kind of finality for now, because I think that's what the reader wants.
Well, you gave me a big twist at the end of that one too. It's like, oh,
well,
my
I
God.
Did. We don't want to give that one away. We did. Right.
It's an ongoing investigation. I don't give away anything.
Right.
What can
hey,
I
Fran, wasn't there a book? Was it John Foles that had two different endings for the Magus? I'm trying to recall.
Yes.
Yeah,
he rewrote it
one...
again and said, which do you like better? I mean, it just...
Yeah, uh-huh. And I guess who had to review all of that? Uh-huh. I think the most difficult book I ever read was, I think it was, I'm trying to remember, it was Jeffrey Deaver, or one of them wrote a book called October, and it was a murder, and they had to read the book backwards and then forwards to figure out what, I figured it out. but it was he wrote the book backwards. And I was like, wow, why am I doing this? And, yeah, the review turned out to be pretty good. But at first I read it forward, then I read it backwards to make sure that I had it right, because I wouldn't want to make a mistake. So what about a flashback to the beginning? Do you ever have a flashback to the beginning or to an event that draws the conclusion that comes?
I did, Francis Allen, in a couple of my books. As you know, I took a scene out of essentially the middle of the book, which I guess I did in The Spanish Revenge, and put it up front as a prologue to kind of be a tease. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I haven't done that since. I don't know. I sort of had a kind of ambivalence about it, about pulling something out. I was afraid that would end up tipping off too much for the reader, and I haven't done it again. I mean, I'll have a prologue that's earlier in time, 10 years earlier or something, that's a genuine prologue. But the idea of a prologue, of pulling something out of the middle of the book and putting it up front to sort of engage the reader, as I say, maybe it worked that time, but I've been afraid to do it again. Has anybody else here tried that once? No, maybe it was
know.
A dumb thing.
Did anybody else
thing.
Use
no.
a prologue besides Alan?
Maybe it was a dumb thing to do.
I have a prologue and an epilogue in my book that kind of, you know, set the scene at the beginning and then set the scene at the end. But I don't know that it's like a flashback. It's the term prologue is like it gets a lot of people who say, I don't like prologues and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not exactly sure what the clear definition of a prologue actually is. I've certainly never done anything like taking it out of the middle of the book and putting it. Generally, it's something from that started before the book starts that you're using to set it up, and sometimes it will work at the end to come back to that to wrap it up. But, again, you got to be careful with overdoing that.
But since this is about endings, I must say, and somebody raised the epilogue point a minute ago, I mean, I had an editor a couple editors ago who said the one thing about, he said, yes, you can have an epilogue, it's okay, but you must keep your epilogue short. He pounded that into my head, and I've always kept it short. I think that's important because it otherwise takes away from the action and the story. I don't know if others use epilogues and whether they would agree with that editor's advice. If you do, keep it short.
It could be literally a paragraph or two sometimes.
Okay.
You know, and I've seen it be very effective with like a paragraph or two epilogue. Yes, absolutely. You don't want it, certainly don't want it more than a page, I wouldn't think, you know.
Correct.
I would agree. There are two things I hate, though, and they're prologues and dreams. Both of those just kind of, you know, you guys probably hate me, but I've never done a prologue. I think they're kind of like manipulative for the reader because everyone knows why it's there. So I've stayed away from prologues. Epilogues are different to me. I mean, I have no problem with that. And dreams drive me crazy. Because to me, that's the writer being really manipulative, because no one really dreams the way writers portray a dream. They mostly don't make sense. So those are the two things. But I totally agree that epilogues and prologues, if you're going to use them, should be short.
Well, you should read the book I just read that I won't say about that. They're bragging about my new review all over Facebook, and I was like, there are a lot of dreams, and this was a horror, and the girl in the book was a psychologist that decided on who lives and who dies. So if anybody did an immoral thing, they would put on her list, and I'm going like, did I really write a review? It's all over Facebook. They think it's the most fantastic review I've written, and I won't even say what I thought about the book. I just hope she doesn't write a sequel. Seriously. I mean, it was interesting and it was good, but I don't know. Bruce, you write crime and police crime novels. So, John Byron, how does he go about solving the crime and leading to the end in Among the Shadows and Beneath the Shadows? Because he's different in both books. He's sort of different in the second one.
He is a little different. I mean, that's intentional. Part of the journey of writing these is that I actually had a path that I wanted John to go on. We just talked about how the protagonist changes or should change as the series goes on. And I actually was accidentally bright enough to plan that out a little bit. I knew as I was writing the first novel, Among the Shadows, where I wanted John to be by the end of the third book, as far as emotionally and personally. And so really it's a question of, you know, does he learn or does he change or is he forced by his own choices during these novels to mature or to recognize some of his mistakes as he goes, and what is he willing to do to try and fix those things that are wrong with him. You know, obviously he has a, not only does he have a vested interest in solving the case, but as you know, he also has an interest in Diane Joyner. And I think John is looking to try and become a better person as he goes on and not make the same mistakes he's made in his past.
I found that an interesting combination too. I was like, really, you said that, that is really good. Because if anybody gets to know Diane Joyner, you'll know who she is and why that's, you know, most people back then wouldn't write a book like that or put them together.
Right.
And like, yeah, this is really good. And, you know, I get to read everything. So, Charles, in Second Story Man, the ending is true to life. And what are you going to do with Henry Swan next? We're not going to ask about this one. What are you going to do with him next? And is he going to, he's a riot.
And as I said, I'm just finishing it now. Has two kids, and one of them is his partner hires him to do something, Goldblatt, because I wanted this one to explore more about their relationship, and you get a little history of Goldblatt. So that's where this one is going, and it may be my last one. I thought the last one was going to be my last one because, for me, I don't know about you guys. When the character gets predictable and boring, I just don't write it anymore unless I have a really good idea. So I didn't start it for a year or two after the other one because I was working on Second Story Man, but I only would have because I came up with an idea that I thought would work for me.
So would you decide you're not going to kill him off, but you're going to create a new main character with a new type of ending and a different type of murder mystery or not murder mystery, mystery thriller?
Yes, but I would never kill off a main character. Again, I think that's...
Oh, don't.
it irritates me. The other thing that irritates me is when you're reading a crime novel and you know that there's a character in that novel that's only there to be killed. That's the only reason that character's there, and that drives me crazy, too.
Yeah, that drives me crazy, too, but I have to say this. I have to announce my shows for next. I'm on the Air Thursday with the author of Dangerous Places, Leah Nash. On Thursday, I got this book. Ocean View Publishing sends me things, and I don't even know I'm getting them. But Philip Donnelly's book, Speed the Dawn, is phenomenal. He's coming on Thursday. Next Thursday, Michael Shishko, the former head of the CDC, Evil Winds. We're going to talk about Darfur and the refugees on the 21st, and he snuck one in. You have to read it. Alan Jacobson, The Dark Side of the Moon, Karen Vale at Her Best. This book is absolutely fantastic. You may never want to go to the moon again, so seriously. On the 27th, Tess Gerritsen, we're going to talk about Island Zero. And then I go back on the air August 1st. I'm taking July off. And, of course, I will be at the Thriller Fest to say hi to everybody and learn from you guys at the panels. So, Alan, Craig Page is a very different kind of character. Would you ever create another main character to work with him? Or is he going to be, besides the Washington lawyer that I love, that I know is coming next, right?
Yep. What I've done is, you're absolutely right. What I did is, I created a second character. I decided to take a break from Craig Page, and I created a character, Kelly Cameron, in Washington Power Play. She's an FBI agent, mid-30s, single mom, in charge of a task force to find a Chinese mole in the U.S. government. And the book got sufficiently did well that the publisher asked for another Kelly Cameron book. So I'm now going to rotate Kelly Cameron books and Craig Page books. And I really like doing that because it's a way of taking off from the Craig Page, not getting stale at it. And I've really come to like this additional, the second hero, so that's kind of the way I'm going. But Craig Page doesn't appear in those. Russian Resurgence is his, and then he's going to have to wait a book because Kelly Cameron's coming up next.
When is she coming up? Because I know I put you in my schedule.
She's coming up. You will get first notice as soon as I get a pub date, I promise you, because I know that you liked her in Washington Power Play, and I promise I will let you know when we bring her out. Expected date is next spring, since Russian Resurgence has just come out.
Oh, I have a few days to read it, but I have to announce this. I usually don't talk about me, but there's an author named Karen Vaughn. She writes the Laura and series, and her book just came out, and guess who the villain is? You got it, me. I'm serious. I was like, oh my God. Yeah, Francesca Bartoli Lewis is someone that steals people's novels and gets them published as her own, and that's all I'll say because I have to read it. And I guess when I review it, I can't say it's me. You know that, but I am the villain, and I am nasty. I'm narcissistic. I'm rotten to the core, and I'm so proud because I've always wanted to be a villain in somebody's book. So she made my day. Not anybody that wants to make me the bad guy, feel free. I've always wanted to be the reviewer that, you know, writes nasty things and people want to kill her. But maybe I should start doing that. You never know. So. Rick, in yesterday's news, did anybody ever write an ending where you have room to interpret it, or a dark moment, or an unprecedented ending where everybody goes, are you serious?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of questions in there, I guess.
I think so. I don't know.
I certainly have done an implied ending, and yeah, you know, I think the idea of somebody goes, oh, wow, are you serious, really? That's what I'm always striving for, which is that, you know, that the reader does not see the final twist coming until the very end. And, you know, it's that balance you have to strike between, oh, my gosh, that I can't believe that. I had no idea. But on the other hand, it can't come out of nowhere. You know, you got to play fair with the reader. So you have to have set it up along the way, so that when he thinks about it, he or she thinks about it, it's then kind of like, yeah, that's right. He did say that there. Oh, that makes sense. But, yeah, that's something I certainly strive for, and I think most do.
Does anybody else have, like, I have a whole list of different types of ways to end a book. And does anybody ever have a character that goes, aha, I think I got it? Or where someone else actually solves the murder or solves it, and the main character is just there?
Yes, unfortunately, the first crime novel I ever wrote, which was called Swan's Last Song, the detective did not solve the crime, and I couldn't get it published. No one would publish it. And 20 years after I wrote it, I thought, well, maybe publishing has changed, and I gave it to an editor that I had worked with on a nonfiction crime book. And he read it, and he said, I love this book, but I can't publish it with this ending. So I changed the ending. And I still love the first ending. And as a matter of fact, if you get the edition that's out now, either ebook or the paperback, we put both endings in it so that the reader can choose. And I understand why they said, crime, you know, mystery readers are going to hate this, you know, they're going to be unsatisfied, and I was really, except I wasn't.
Well, would you ever disagree with the editor? What if you said, I want to end it that way? Would it matter? What if you're right and they're wrong? Seriously.
Well, Fran, they have the final word. They just say, we're not going to publish it that way. You know, I could stand and break it and say, you know, I'm not going to change it, and they'd say, so long, you know. That's why
it depends who you are too. You know, obviously, if you're Stephen King, you say that's the ending. But for most of us, anyway, in the end, if, as Charles said, if you want to get it published, you do what the editor says. Although I have to say, I've never had a situation where an editor, made me do something like that I didn't feel strongly. Generally, a lot of times it will actually be a better idea, and you'll think about it and you'll say, yeah, you know, I'm too close to this, and this person really has a pretty good idea on it. Maybe I've just worked with some good editors.
I think it's really important to take that criticism to heart. And then if you disagree, fine. But it's, in Devil in the Hole, I did not have the killer appear in the book at all. And then an agent read it and said, you know, I think you should. And he was absolutely right. I put him into the book, and it's a better book. So I think you have to be open to that criticism or suggestion. Then you just decide whether you think it makes it a better book or not.
That raises a very general point, you know, interacting with the editor, which is always a tricky kind of a thing. You're right. Depending on your stature, it also depends how powerful a personality and opinionated and strong-willed the editor is. I mean, I've had some editors really fight about even relatively small points, and once I had to bring my agent into a call and we sort of argued it out, the editor didn't like coincidence, and coincidence is part of life. And, you know, we ended up with a big brouhaha, and finally I think my agent got the editor to back down. But coincidence is important, and you can't write it off as a part of the book.
I agree with you.
I think that's why so many people
are doing self-publishing.
Well, but I should point out, too, that, like, so I've spent most of my life as an editor, not a book editor, but as a newspaper editor, in which I've told people what to do and said, you know, like, okay, I hear your opinion, but I want you to do it my way. So when you're on the other side of it, I do think of that, and I think that makes me a better person, because I'm thinking, yeah, well, this person is doing the same thing I do, so maybe they do know something.
Well, that's interesting. Now, in your book, Dick, when I read yesterday, it was, like I said, I got that out of nowhere, and it was, I read it like 6 months before it came out.
Yeah,
I couldn't put it down. That's what happened when I got T.J. O'Connor's book. The consultant, it was staring at me and going, genius is coming out, and he's coming on the show August 27th, because he is. And I like, oh my God, they just send them to me, and I've got like a stack behind me. I've got 20 on my chair, 20 on my table, and my husband hid the rest of them behind me, and he says, you know, you'll get to it when you get to it. And I still have to read Fallen by David Baldacci and a few others. So when you wrote the ending of yesterday's news, it was sort of open-ended. So how will Claire, because we have about 5-6 minutes, how will Claire deal with her next conflict?
Well, you know, again, I guess it's the definition of open-ended. I think I do resolve most of the issues of what happened but right, there is an ongoing story that is left a bit open. And, again, I have this book was – Yesterday's News was originally written as a standalone thriller. Mm-hmm. So I really needed to close up a lot of the answers. I mean, I wasn't, like, thinking about a second book. And it wasn't until after the book had proceeded in the process that the publisher was like, well, we'd like to – you know, we like the Claire character. We'd like to do another one, like to do a series. It's like any series. There'll be a kind of a B story with her dealing with some of the unanswered questions from the first book. Mm-hmm. But there'll be a whole fresh new story. It's not like the story is just continuing. The character is continuing, but most of the answers to the story are in the first book.
I would love to see what would happen if Henry Swan met Charles Floyd in a book. Now, that might be interesting. You just never know.
I'll take consideration.
Otherwise, Kelly Cameron's going to go up against Craig Page. That would be really interesting.
No. We don't want to do that for him. For sure
so,
not.
I read Claire. Who's your other main character that I don't know that I haven't gotten, and why haven't I gotten it?
My character, I wrote a series involving a newspaper reporter called Gil Malloy that came out, three books in The Kennedy Connection, Blonde Ice, and Shooting for the Stars. And he's a newspaper reporter, and he's in some ways like Claire, but in some ways different. He's also a bit flawed, but flawed in a lot of different ways. But he's a little bit closer to my background because I'm a newspaper person and he's a newspaper reporter. Claire is a TV news executive, so I have to do a little bit more research into what a TV news executive actually does, which is not easy to figure out.
Will you go back to him ever again, Dick, or are you finished with him?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I've never finished with anything, Charles. I do tend to go back, and I'll just real quickly, in other words, I've done a situation where I've written a character, and then years later I've come back and resurrected that character. I had a reporter that made her first appearance in 1985, and then in 1998 I came back with another book with that character, even though I had done other books in between. So I think it's just like when you're writing the book, you either decide you want a new character or you like a character. I mean, look, like you talked about Henry Swan 20 years ago, you had written it, and then you don't necessarily ever say goodbye to the characters.
No, you can't, and you can't kill off the characters. There's one author, I won't say who, that killed off a main character, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to read you anymore, because it's just like, how could you kill this person off when they play a major part in whatever? Let me just say this, that my reviews are pretty, sometimes I go over the top, I don't even know, but I don't put spoilers in it, and I try not to. And if there's ever a situation where I put something in it, I don't have to change anything. But if there's a line or two that you feel is, you know, shouldn't be there, then just feel free to say, you know, what was the matter with you that day, you know, when you wrote that or whatever. Because you never know. So do you ever feel after writing your novels that maybe you should have changed the villain to make the person more evil and the main character even more aggressive?
No, but I have thought, what the hell am I doing being a writer? I have thought that after.
We've all thought that.
Right, and I've one time had a character that's Alan Topol, an editor said, hey, this is she's one of the worst villains I've ever had, and I felt terrific coming from this experienced editor. Of course, I killed her off in the book, but it was fun creating her anyhow. That woman could not have lived beyond that.
Well, sometimes I really wish they would kill off some of the people, because they really, you know, after a while. Do you ever read a book or have a character that you really wish that the author would kill off at the ending? I mean, like the last book I read yesterday, I won't say the name of it, that the book is all over, my review is all over the place. The author left it where you really don't know if the character is going to be sacrificed or not, and I really don't care. To be honest. So do you ever get it where I'm serious. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe I read this. And Father's Day is coming, everyone. So yesterday's news, second story, man, the Russian resurgence among the shadows, beneath the shadows. You know, those are great presents for Father's Day. Brother's Day, Son's Day, Uncle's Day, Grandfather, Great-Grandfather. Seriously, yeah. I'm still waiting for my aunt's day. Actually, my nieces and my sister was alive, she used to send me Nordstrom's and Bay-Bays. And because she's not here anymore, I go myself and I go to Kmart and Target. I don't care where. As long as I buy myself a present for being the best aunt on this universe. So Father's Day is coming, and I really feel that everybody needs to buy a present. So before we end, what is your next novel tone to be, and where can we learn more about you and your work? And I have to start putting you in my schedule. And I'm glad that Bruce said October, because my show's booked till the end of September, except for Matt Quayle, who's December 4th. Seriously. So what do you have for everybody?
I have a book coming out in September. It's actually an anthology.
Oh,
it's a sequel to a book I did with two of my friends, Tim O'Mara and Ross Claven, called Triple Shot. And this one is called Three Strikes, and it's three crime novellas. So that's what I've got coming out next. And you can find me anywhere you want. I mean, I'm not hard to find.
I'll find you July 13th when I go to the Philippines. So when am I getting this so I could put you in my schedule for October?
Yeah.
May as well just figure this out.
I'll probably have books in August, I would guess.
Okay, so as soon as I get it, I will.
Yeah, Alan Topol, Russian Resurgence just came out. As you know, it's around everywhere. Websites www.alantopol.com, and books are of course up on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and wherever. So you know, I hope people try it and look for it, and Washington Operator with Kelly Cameron is going to come up next spring, so that's where we are. Fran, thanks very, very much. And good panel today. Really, really good panel.
I had a
great.
We talked about the Second Claire. There's a book called Below the Fold, which is a newspaper term for a story that nobody cares too much about because it's not on the front page. And that'll be out next spring. And you can find out more about me at rgbelsky.com.
Well, I've got you down for March and April, people. And I've got Charles down for October. And Bruce, when is your next one coming out? I gotta, before my schedule gets really crazed.
October 30th. It's called Beyond the Truth. It's the third in the Detective Byron mystery series.
Wow.
And you can find out more about that at brucerobertcoffin.com.
Well, let me look at my calendar right here. October 30th. It holds a special meaning for me, but that's beside the point. Actually, it's a Tuesday. So, if I get it before, now I've got just two people in October. This is really good. So I want to thank
everyone. We'll try to get
everyone.
You one early.
Yeah, please. Because,
thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, this is fantastic because I'm sitting here taking notes and learning too. My book, A Daughter's Promise, came out in July of last year, but my new Caregiver's Guide came out April 2nd, and it's to teach people about Alzheimer's, traumatic brain injury, and elder care abuse. So I thank you to Alan for giving me a blurb in the book. I am so excited, and people are reading it. And I was told that A Daughter's Promise just got its 15th review. I don't know what it says. I didn't read it yet because I don't, you know. Bad reviews are bad reviews and good reviews. I've gotten really nice reviews, except for one author that said he was confused. He didn't understand what I wrote when I said I wouldn't put my mother in a nursing home, I guess, maybe. You know, there are people, I don't care. At this point, I stand by what I'm writing, and I'm writing my next one. I haven't got a title, but it's going to be my grandmother was in a Polish extermination camp during World War One, right before World War One. So she's Katie, and my grandmother Bertha was sold into slavery to her family when she came here. So I thought maybe I should honor both of them. So I want to thank everyone for today, and I am looking forward. Rick, you're going to be at the Philifest, I hope.
Can't
wait. I'll be there.
And Charles, you're going to be there, right?
Well, I'm going to stop by. I'll probably have lunch with Dick. We just made a lunch
date.
That would be nice.
I'm celebrating my 21st anniversary this year going there. So that would be really nice for everybody. And Bruce, are you coming?
We'll have to meet up. I am. We'll have to meet up.
Oh, finally. Yay. Well, I'm going to be there on Friday and Saturday. And that'll be good. And I'm going to look for everybody. Alan, one of these days you have to come too. And,
absolutely. Just can't do it this year. Yep.
Uncle Leonard said to tell you he loved the Russian resurgence because I sent it to him on his birthday. Yes, he emailed me and he said, yeah, and I'm going to send him a few more for Father's Day. I'll probably send him one of each of your books because he loves me. I'm his favorite. And uncle's 97 years old and he's still kicking. So they tell me, and he's got a girlfriend. And what can I say? So thank you so very much, everybody. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day. I want to thank you guys again. And if I decide to do this again, I'll let you know. Have a nice day, everybody, and bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Fran.
Thanks, Fran. Enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.